Hello, and welcome to the Inside Evies podcast for February the 25th, 2022. This is episode number 99. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Volkswagen ID. Buzz. The 2022 Volkswagen ID.4 EPA range numbers are getting a boost, and Faraday Future has built its first production intent vehicle. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the overachiever, Mr. Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the miraculous Mr. Martin Lee from the recently revamped EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together astonishing videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. And we also have a special guest with us for this first part of today's episode, at least. Please welcome Clint Simone. he is the director of video for Motor One Network US, and he also does some writing over there as well. All right, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notification. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. So, all right, with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So I'd like to kick it off with our comment of the week, or Kotwa for short. If you cue that up for us.
I forgot to get that ready. Just keep adding. It's fine. Just keep adding.
So this one comes from comes to us from a total Inside EVs podcast fanboy by the name of John. Apparently, he was checking out this week's bonus episode, the second of our charging infrastructure series featuring Matthew Bonnet from Allego Charging in Europe. Anywho, said John, look at these zeros. It's like Prius Subaru Crew puking emoji four times. Well, I don't know. Well, John, thanks for your comment. We hope your tummy is feeling better now.
And, Dom, let me point out the four puking emojis were for Martin, Dominic, Kyle, and I.
Not Mr. Mode.
So if you didn't pick that up, so thanks a lot. We appreciate the support.
But we should point out that there's no such thing as a Prius Subaru. Toyota makes Prius, and Subaru is a totally different brand. And coincidentally, Toyota owns 20% of Subaru, which is why the BZ4X and Solterra. So Subaru Solterra are pretty much the same vehicle. Anyway, there's a comment.
That took a while. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Yeah. Anyway, that's our comment of the week. So let's move along. All right. So let's look at what we've been driving this week. Let's talk about that because that's a lot more interesting. So we have Clint with us today because he got to drive a very special vehicle that a lot of us have been waiting for. So Clint, tell us about your British adventure with the VW ID. Buzz. Maybe start with the exterior design since that's what got people excited when the original concept was revealed.
First of all, thank you for having me on show 99. I didn't know I was missing the party. We're going to have to talk about that later, whatever goes on for the next show. Right. Thank you for having me as always. It's really always exciting to be here, especially, excuse me, still early in California here, when we get to drive fun things. And the ID. Buzz is a very fun thing that we've seen teased in one form or another for, God, since the early 2000s, some version of a revamped Volkswagen microbus. And then we see this amazing concept in 2017. And finally, this year, Volkswagen let us drive a pre-production version. We'll see the entire thing unwrapped, no camo, no rainbows, no things over the windows on March 9th. So I guess everybody can reserve final judgment until then. But this was our first chance to really get up against the sheet metal. We haven't seen the interior yet. There are definitely not photos of the interior leak that you can find anywhere on the internet. Don't even try to find those. But for the exterior,
I can't tell if that was tongue in cheek or not.
It was definitely tongue in cheek.
Okay, you can find them so look at Motor One.
We just can't show them on this stream because we upset people who we try and work with. But they're out there,
right?
Or that maybe they're not out there. I don't know.
I would never encourage anybody to find those if they had a burning curiosity. But for the outside of the vehicle, I do think the camo was a very fun look, but yeah. It was the first chance to see the dimensions. The caveat, and unfortunately we'll have to keep caveating things, is that it wasn't the spec that we'll get in the US. It was what they're calling the standard wheelbase model. So it's a bit shorter than what we can assume will come to the US, which will of course be a three row vehicle as well. So it was what I'd call 80-85% of what will be representative in the US when it goes on sale in 2024. But we know a few more things than we maybe did before. They will do a two-tone paint job. I think that's the actual spec that we'll see when we see it on March 9th. And for anybody who's been upset about the way this thing looks in camouflaged form, I hope that starts putting you in the right direction. But it's a really interesting vehicle, and you can evaluate it so many different ways, just as a three-row people mover, as an EV on its own. And then there's a huge swarm of people that wants to evaluate this thing as a reincarnation of a Volkswagen Icon. And those are three very different things, to be honest with you. So there's just a lot to talk about with the buzz, as I've sort of been thrown into over the last few weeks.
We're looking at the concept, the original concept for this version of the buzz on the screen just now went away, but... And that's what got people, you know, really excited again. It's very reminiscent of the original T1 Volkswagen bus, right?
Yeah. And I guess I should point out, probably above all else, if you want to head over to the Motor One YouTube channel after the podcast here, it's our most recent upload, at least for now. So we have a full first drive of that pre-production ID Buzz, and we walk you through some of the specs, which I'm sure we'll go over in just a minute too.
Right. So tell us about the inside.
Well,
I mean,
I don't know.
Can you tell us what can you tell us about the inside?
What I can tell you is that the driving position is amazing, and it is completely different than 99% of vehicles on the road today. For anybody who drives or will drive an e-Transit, I'm sure there's more similarity there than anything else. But in some of the photos or the video you were just showing, you can see that behind the really thin A-pillars are these huge side windows to either side. And then that combined with the really strange angle of the rake on the front windshield, it's just it's a really unique view forward. You're aware of the large dash in front of you as a driver, but the van has almost no front overhang whatsoever. So in that sense, I think they did a good job of tying in the heritage with the original microbus. But apart from that, you have to have, you know, crash test ratings and have all sorts of electronics that that van could never dream of. So it's still impressive to me that they were able to keep the front overhang so short.
Right. So we're looking at the vehicle in profile now. I'm like, well, couldn't it move? So what I think what everyone wants to see was like a flush front, basically. So maybe if you could pull that front windshield forward, so it, you know, comes out to the same plane as the hood, basically. Right. That would, yeah, and that would keep your crash integrity. But
if you drove a bus from the 60s and you got in a front end collision, your legs were in trouble. So I think that there's a big difference with what we have to do today, safety wise.
Well, sure. Yeah. But you drove it though. So you have some driving impressions for us?
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, the specs on again, caveat, we're going to Martin's area of the world now on little sleep, and it was a German spec van. So the steering wheel is on the same side it is in a US car, driving on, for me, the wrong side of the road with somebody in the passenger seat saying that this is a prototype. So you really want to check before you make a turn. So all those things, you know, it was about 45 minutes in total that we got to drive the van. And, you know, everybody thinks it's a pre-production drive. So as an automotive journalist, you have to really feel out what's what. But it's also a massive van. You know, you're not going to drive a Ferrari or something that you need to feel out the nuances of how it drives. I will say I also did drive for majority of my time the cargo version. So the interesting point there is it has a huge area in the back for cargo, and there was nothing in it. So the suspension... Right. was ready, just like a pickup truck would be, to take on a ton of stuff in the back. So that made it a bit different. I did switch over to the passenger van and was impressed by the way it got along. It felt very similar to the ID4 and how it accelerates. It's obviously not going to blow anybody away, but at the same time, for anybody who's driven a three-row vehicle or a delivery van, whatever it may be, that's a combustion, engine, this is going to feel a lot more special. And it's going to feel night and day in terms of just the general acceleration you can get off the line.
I heard someone say the steering was really light on this one. How did you find it?
The steering, and then, you know, every time you start to make a comment about that, they'll tell you that the tuning is different in Europe than it will be in the States too. It didn't stand out to me one way or another. I don't find the ID4 steering particularly excellent either, for what it's worth, but this did feel similar to that. And the other similarity you'd have with the ID Buzz is the layout of what's in front of you. The same infotainment stack is there, and then the gauge cluster in front of you as well is very similar. There is a D and a B mode, so it does get down to pretty dang much one pedal driving. We were slowing down from pretty good speed, and at a stoplight, it would get down to, I think, 1 mile per hour or something like that. I don't know if it actually hit a full stop, at least in the limited testing, but the same modes offered on ID4 will be on ID Buzz there.
And we're hoping that does come, because they're enabling auto hold with version 3.0 of the software, which is bizarrely going to follow version 2.4, which seems a bit of a jump to me. But they're enabling auto hold on the ID cars. So I would hope that that is in conjunction with one pedal driving, because it would be odd to have to go down to 2 miles an hour, then use the physical brakes to stop the car, and then be able to let your foot off the brake pedal and have auto hold just hold you.
That's how I think it will be, by the way. I don't think there will be one pedal. I think it'll just be auto hold.
Surely the point of adding that mode would be just let your foot off and it comes to a stop. But hey, I hope you're wrong. I suspect you may be right.
I genuinely don't think we'll see one pedal driving.
I think the car's not engineered that way. So
yeah, because
that does seem silly.
There's no way to turn creep off in ID cars. And the European spec ID3, ID4 already have auto hold. So we've driven this car, and it brings you to, you know, 3 miles an hour with saying blend in, you know, basically torque to keep the car moving along. For creep, you have to hit the physical brake pedal. When you come to a stop, now you don't have to keep your foot on the brake anymore.
Let off. Yep.
So
that's silly.
I was pretty excited about the cargo van, because I used to work, you know, in a van driving like 400 some miles a day. I've got like a million miles of driving vans, like this kind of, well, a Ford E350 basically, but a little smaller than this, but, you know, very van position. So I was looking very forward to this cargo van. And I noticed when you were driving it, you have like the passenger compartment is divided, completely sealed off from the back compartment, which is kind of unique. You don't really see that. But then you were saying this morning that what's the plan for America for the cargo van?
We're not getting cargo van in the States. They confirmed that, at least on initial offer. And that's because of, you know, they're building it in Europe. So there are tax implications and extra charges and fees that come with that. And this is where the vehicle kind of divides in my mind, because in Europe, it's not really an emotional play. They're not working as hard to tie in the culture of the microbus and old generations and Icon Revived. They're just like, no, in Europe, in a city center, you can't really have a combustion engine as a delivery driver. So we're going to sell a crap load of these things for people that just need to do their job.
Right. Mm. And there's a video on Inside EVs right now. I think somebody got a chance to take some video of the back space of the Buzz.
Yeah, we weren't also supposed to do that, so I can't condone whether or not that's real.
Okay, so yeah, that might not actually be the real ID Buzz, but you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm seeing some interesting comments about battery packs, and will we get bigger ones, and will we get all-wheel drive versions, and
so the short version that they're selling in Europe, it's got the 82 kilowatt hour battery, it's 77 usable, and yes. They can't put in, but we heard the rumors that there was going to be like 111 kilowatt hour battery possibly for this, but that won't fit in the short wheelbase van. So the long wheelbase van is the one coming here. So we get a big battery.
So, I mean, this is how these things work. I never know I haven't been on a drive like that before. It was a really unique opportunity. So I asked every question that might be dumb, that might be off the record, this or that, and just waited for an answer if I got one at all. And it was a very cryptic flow of information from them, because they're still at the early side of this. Remember, it's not going on sale in the US until 2024. That's a long time from now.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say something like, okay, we're getting a longer wheelbase, a bigger battery could probably fit in that wheelbase, huh? And they'd be like, you know, possibly, yes. So, yeah, we can assume without assuming that it will have a bigger battery pack, at least as an option. And then following the chart of ID4, my assumption would be an all-wheel drive version with a bit more horsepower as well. Neither of those things were confirmed to me completely, but you know, they didn't shy away from them either. I think it's in the plane.
This is Björn Newlund's videos. This is one of his. They're in my playlist to watch. And by the look of it, VW opened it up for him and they've showed him around. And I can't play the video because, well, it's his video. It's copyright. But yeah, so this, by the looks of it, is a pretty lengthy sort of 7-minute video on them showing him around the cargo version. So this does look, again, a difference in press teams as well.
Yeah,
I heard when he was driving around in his videos, and he had quite a chatty minder. I don't know what your minder was like, Clint, but his minder in whether he went to Germany or Norway was pretty chatty. And the guy was like, "Yeah, no. So the battery is going to be the same size as the ID4, but it's not the same battery. It's going to charge at 180 kilowatts, I think it was. And just because it's the same size, it's not the same battery. It's actually, I can't tell you about the chemistry, but it's going to charge much quicker." And I'm like, whoa, like all the UK videos that I watched, the guy stays really stum and like, yes, no, right. Even when, and then Bjorn just got them chatting and they're like, yeah. So all these details coming out from the Norwegian videos. So yeah, super interesting.
I don't think Bjorn just got them chatting. Volkswagen knew who they were dealing with, knew the of interest that his followers, you know, command. And they put the right person in the vehicle with Bjorn. That didn't happen by accident.
That was the guy was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think by the time they got to us, because we were among the last media to drive it, they had had a leak on interior photos. They had probably had a circumstance like we just talked about where somebody was a little chatty. And they left us to interpret most things ourselves. And I also think, and I genuinely mean this, that they're not certain of everything that's going to be in the US vehicle just yet. I did also get a confirmation that it is not going to be available with a solar roof in the US. We had seen rumors that that might be the case, but I got a quote back that was something to the effect of, unless you live in California and Texas, it's not worth the return that you get for the expense that they put into it. So I wouldn't expect that.
It's not, generally solar is not really on the roof of the car. It's not about return so much, you know. It's going to be a premium price, but some people just like to have that tied in, you know. Some
people don't mind
paying
a
premium for having your car generate, you know, some amount of the electricity that you drive on. It's kind of a neat thing. So I had a question. Did you get to sit in the back at all, the back seats?
I did, yes.
Oh, okay. How'd you find that? Because I was thinking earlier, because I've been kind of worried that people would be too disappointed in the looks of it. Like, it's not as, you know, as awesome looking as the concept vehicle was. So is it going to be like a dud or something? But then I thought maybe it could take over for like premium minivans or something. I don't know.
So this is when I get into territory where I think I will violate embargoes. So what I will say is March 9th, you'll see the entire thing, and we will have video on Inside EVs and on Motor One to show you everything you've ever wanted to possibly see about the interior on the ID Buzz.
Can you say whether the back seats are comfortable, the seventh, because they can fit up to seven?
Yeah,
I think it'll be a three row. But again, the version I was in wasn't that version. And I don't know if interior trims will be different, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the amount of room in the third row can be kind of restricted, I think, especially in like a short wheelbase vehicle like that.
Well, I also said, I mean, just with the proportions of this one, the battery pack isn't going to take up the entire wheelbase. So you'd assume that there'd be an area in the floor for loading and cargo. And I asked that question and it was the same sort of answer of like, maybe. So my guess is that there'll be like a false floor situation with some extra space for cargo in the US version.
Interesting.
Clint, was the drive just on like city streets, or did you take it out on the highway? How was like the sound insulation? How quiet was it inside?
Very impressive. I thought for a pre-production vehicle, which was, you know, those are prone to having air leaks and all sorts of things, I thought it was very impressive. I mean, having experience with ID4, I thought this sounded quieter noise insulation wise than the ID4 on the highway. And, you know, I was in a situation that was not at all comfortable to me. So I was aware of just about everything going on around me. There was not an issue at all to be found with noise insulation in the first drive article. I called it out specifically that I was really pleased with how it all felt.
So does this have the ID4 that this is based on, the MEB platform, with the real world drive version, has like a really crazy tight turning circle, which makes it really great for urban situations. This is have that same feature.
Yeah. The turning circle they had in whatever their German spec was, so I couldn't translate it immediately in the moment, but just know that in practice, it's actually extremely impressive. And although the one we'll have will be longer, there's a lot of angle, a lot of lock you get on those front wheels. So it's kind of a cool feature. You can move it around better than you think you can.
Right. And what about power? They let you hammer it?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, it's the same sort of experience I had in the rear wheel drive ID4, which was most electric vehicles off the line, no issues at all. And then that tapers off pretty quickly. Right. I think it's the same 204 horsepower, 221 pound feet. So it's not nothing. And you rely on that torque figure to get you up and moving. And it felt more than adequate. I mean, we still drive present day a lot of three row SUVs, vans, et cetera, that are combustion powered, that don't have the same get off the line pace. But this settles in just fine. You know, there's not anybody that's going to say, damn, this is a sports car. But at the same time, I think it more than accomplishes what it needs to. I am curious, though, as you load it down, we didn't get to fill it up with people and drive it. And I think that'll be a bigger test for that battery pack, to have a van weighed down with people and things, slightly worse aerodynamics than the ID4. What's the range going to be like, you know, on a family road trip? Range at all, we haven't had confirmed to us one way or another, but with ID4 specs, Tom, you can immediately call me out here. Is it crazy to assume 200 to 210 for an EPA range on the Buzz if ID4 is achieving a little more with better aerodynamics?
No, I don't think it's crazy. And Volkswagen's been increasing their efficiency, you know, as they move along. I'm not saying it's going to be rated at that, but, you know, I think with powertrain efficiency improvements that they've been making along the way, it could be up over 200.
Yeah, that would be the hope. I think people would be pretty upset if at least the standard version didn't have over 200 miles. That seems to me of just the general person's acceptable range as they look to purchase an EV. Right. But not sure. We also know that it'll have the plug and charge capability at Electrify America stations, right. Yeah. Which is something they'll roll out with ID4 eventually too.
That's coming this summer in America for the ID4 plug and charge.
Yeah. They were unaware of the timing, but hopefully by 2024, it'll come at launch in the States. That'd be my assumption, at least.
I would imagine and hope that once Volkswagen rolls out plug and charge with the ID4, then every vehicle from there on will have it standard,
right.
Because there's no reason for them not to just put it in the next vehicle.
Oh yeah, definitely. So, Chinmay Karani asks for ID Buzz. I wonder how the frontal collision safety rating will be. Do you have any insight on that? Thank you.
I don't have any insight on that whatsoever, but I know that that platform is, for all the criticism it gets, is at least strong and safe. So I just don't think they're going to build a car that goes on sale in 2024 that would have abysmal crash test ratings. But remember that, you know, the outside shape is a bit deceiving. There's a lot of dash between you and the windshield. I'm not an engineer. I didn't build the thing, but, you know, it doesn't feel like it's sketchy at all with the amount of metal you have between you and the front of the van.
Right. Christian Richard asks, they mentioned pricing at all?
Nothing of the sort, not even a hint, not a wink, not anything close. So again, go back to ID4 and use it as a baseline. It's certainly not going to be less expensive than ID4.
That's not bad though. ID4 is a good value.
I think they do need to have somewhat of a value proposition here. And I also think that down the line, they need to offer a camper version with a pop-up roof, and they need to go through those nostalgia plays too to make this thing the reincarnation that a lot of people wanted it to be.
There's no problem in making this a premium price for me now. We're not with this vehicle. It doesn't need to blow people's socks off in a way that the entry-level ID4 is good value. Entry-level Ioniq 5 is good value in the US, more so than here, actually. But Volkswagen of America don't need a base version of this that gets headlines. The first year, 18 months, it gets all the headlines it needs, and this can be a 60 grand plus vehicle. And then they've got time. I think we shouldn't give them any heat for it being expensive.
Right.
And your guys' interpretation on this, I'd love to hear. I know that electric three-row SUVs are sort of the next thing that the ball is just getting rolling on now, amongst electric pickup trucks too. But even in 2024, we should consider this in the first crop of three-row electric vehicles. Is that right to assume? You know, Rivian R1S, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, Model X has had it all its own way. EQV is Mercedes-Benz EQV is 90,000 euros, I think. So I mean,
Model Y has like optional 7 seats, but there's even not, right?
No, it doesn't. Not the third row.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
sorry, EQB, say that again.
EQB, the boxy one.
Okay.
That's a third
row. But those aren't in the US. I'm just saying.
So like right now, if you want a three row, it's Model Y or Model X. And even iX is 5 seat. So yeah, this will be the third or fourth vehicle, depending on when R1S hits mass production.
Yeah. So probably I guess I should have offered the Tesla caveat, because you're right. Model X has been around for a long time now, and it has been a legitimate three-row SUV, but the options are not plentiful, let's say that. So I think even with this thing's delayed start time, that it should still be among the first three-row family EVs that you can buy, which is pretty cool.
What are the chances that people will adopt it as a minivan, like a use case?
Well, it has minivan doors, so you can't hate that idea.
Right.
Funny enough to me, I saw some pictures on Twitter. I don't know if you guys did, but when the door is open, it completely blocks access to the charge port. So if you're at a charging station and you want to just let it air out a little bit and hang out, I assume the door might have an electronic cutoff point before it hits the charge door. The charge door is right behind the rear wheel.
It looked like to me that, you know, the charge port doesn't open all the way. It only gives you like this little bit. Do you think that's enough room for the door to slide past? That's what it appeared like to me.
Well, the charge door opens toward the front of the vehicle.
Yeah, but not very far. It doesn't like go on a 90.
Yeah, it kind of flaps to about a 90 degree angle or so.
Okay.
But I thought I saw in that Twitter picture that when the van door was completely back, that it just covered the charge door completely.
Yeah, it definitely goes past it. But I just wonder if the door swings out a little bit to clear the charge port. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll play around with it. And
it was also a huge charge port. I mean, it seemed unnecessarily big for what was right behind it, too. It was huge.
So maybe it's not final production then.
Yeah, not certain about that. They also didn't care to clarify whether or not the VW badge at the front of the van would light up. But every person I came into contact with, I told them, light the damn thing up, because Americans love badges that light up for no reason. There's my contribution.
There are reasons, man. There are reasons. Bling. Hey, did they show it to you in like a solid or in the two-tone paint? Did you get to at least see an image?
No, I am so eager to. Members of our team have seen it at a different event.
Okay.
And I am scheduled to get around one soon before that March 9th embargo drop or world debut, I should say. But I'm eager to see it.
We have a comment on screen from Lance on Facebook who says 207 miles is subpar. Okay. You wonder why VW is 7 years behind Tesla and Lucid in battery technology. Lance, you're sounding like some of the crazies on Tesla forums. Who do VW use for battery supply? SK Innovation, LG, Samsung, CATL. Who do Lucid use for batteries? LG Chem. Who do Tesla use for batteries? CATL, LG Chem. It's all the same technology. I don't know where this comes from, that this 7 years behind thing that Tesla are some way ahead. It's the same. It's all the same technology. In fact, VW are moving away from the South Koreans to a unified cell. And arguably, they're doing really interesting things with battery cell technology. I don't disagree with you on 207 miles. It's certainly for U.S. buyers. Borderline that.
Well, we'll get a bigger battery here, so we don't know the range of ours.
Well, yeah, I hope you do get the 111 kilowatt hours that the platform can take, but that would
give us 250 miles, right?
Yeah, right. The technology underlying,
it's got to do more than that. Yeah,
underlying tech is as good as it gets, mate. No worries about it.
All right.
Yeah.
So we've had you here for quite a while now. Anything else you want to?
I'm settled in. I got a blanket. I'm gonna go start my regular job and talk about other cars too, but I appreciate you guys having me. This is lots of fun, and I always love your perspectives on these things too. These are vehicles that, like I said at the beginning, you can evaluate and think about so many different ways now as they're reviving these iconic things from the past. So it was really special to get to drive one and to talk about it with y'all.
All right. Well, have a great morning, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
All right. So, Kyle, I understand you went with your dad this week to trade in his VW ID4 for a Hyundai Ioniq 5. Maybe you can tell us about that a little bit. You have a video up on one of your channels. And also maybe plug the dealer, since I believe they sold at MSRP, which is pretty good.
Yeah, but I don't think they're selling at MSRP for other people, which is kind of odd.
So
I think it's a little special treatment going on here, which I wasn't so pleased about when I found out about that. So
okay. But you got some good range numbers, too, that you can talk about because it was warmer weather.
Yeah, but it wasn't really range testing. So basically, I flew out to JFK to go pick up this Ioniq 5 with my dad. We were talking and I'm like, I'm not really doing anything tomorrow. I'll come out. So I booked the flight and we landed at the same time. It was great because he was out west skiing. We went up in his ID4 to Massachusetts. It was Gary Rome Hyundai. They did sell him the car at sticker, but I don't think they're doing that for other people. They called him because they knew he was in the market for Ioniq 5 because he's been making some videos on the channel. So cool. They watched the channel and said, hey, we'll just get you one. And they got a shooting star limited maxed out, sort of that matte gray color. It was really nice. Good buying experience. I don't think it's right that they're charging over sticker for other customers. And I think we've even had viewers call them and they said, hey, by the way, sorry, it's five over or whatever they want.
No.
So at the end of the day, I think that's kind of silly because there's so many available in the country now. You can buy them at so many dealers for sticker. Do not pay over sticker for this car.
Right.
And don't give into a dealer trying to do that, in my opinion, for a mass production car.
We have a pretty big thread on the Inside EVs forum with dealers. It's people finding dealers that sell in our MSRP. So you can check that out.
Yeah. So anyway, my dad got it for sticker. It was great. That's all we really wanted, And so then we filmed a little video, picking it up, driving it a little bit. We have a road trip video that's going to go out of this as well. And he's thrilled with it. It's great.
Scott Berger says, Kyle, your dad has EV ADD. This is he's trading in his VW ID4, but this is not his first VW ID4. He's had how many?
Right. So he's had a few, but he does have EV ADD, but this isn't new. He's done this my entire life. I think he's done this his life. He's owned hundreds of cars. And so he just likes to play around. He's a car guy. He likes to drive what's new, what's hot on the market. He likes to play around. When Teslas were first coming out, we had a different one in the garage all the time because he was like, oh, this, then he had the first Model 3, then the Model 3 Performance came out, and then the small battery for my mom. And he loves to swap around. And it's been, he actually, I don't think, lost any money doing any of the ID4 stuff because the cars have held their value so well. He's been able to swap around and it doesn't actually in the end cost him anything to do it. So why not? I think it's a blast.
Well, he seemed pretty happy with this one.
He loves it. I think he's thrilled with the technology. He loves the driver assistance, the styling, of course. He's all excited about vehicle to load stuff, even though I can't imagine him plugging anything into his car. But he's really pumped about the charging. And he has some really nice things to say about the cold weather charging. I was on the phone with him yesterday about it. He would bring his ID4 after sitting outside to Electrify America. Both cars don't have real on-route battery preconditioning. He would get between 30 and 40 kilowatts in his ID4 because the battery was frozen. In this, he was getting 60 or 70. It would then warm up to a point. It would hit a ledge step, and he was into 120, 130s later on in the pack. And so I've got him hooked up with all the OBD scanner stuff so he can monitor battery temperature. And we actually had a really in-depth call with Hyundai engineers for a separate project I'm working on for some charging stuff. And my dad was there because we were doing it on the way up. And so he learned a lot about the charging profiles for the car, that the exact temperatures that you need everything at to get the maximum charging speeds out. And he's all set up to get a great charging experience, even without preconditioning.
Nice. And what channel is that on?
The delivery pickup?
Yes.
Yeah, it's on out-of-spec reviews, but we'll have an out-of-spec motoring road trip to go pick it up as well. So multiple videos, and it's nothing special. We didn't really break any news or anything like that. It's
just I enjoyed watching the video, though. I watched the delivery video. It was,
you know, it was thanks nice. For watching.
Yeah, great on. So, Tom, you had the Mini Cooper SE. You said goodbye to it this week. I don't know if you had anything more. We talked about the not-so-wintery range test you did last week. Are there any other notes that you want to mention before we move on, before you tell us about the awesome car that replaced it?
No, really. I did some charging recordings. I did 10 to 80%. I did 0 to 100% on the Mini Cooper SE. It's kind of like a pretty boring charging curve. It's pretty flat. You know, they do a good job with it, but I mean, as good job as you can with 50 kilowatt maximum DC charging. You plug in, it's usually taken in somewhere around 43, 44, gradually creeps up to 50, and it's pretty linear till about 75% or so when it starts trickling down. We'll have those videos up pretty soon. And when they came to pick up the Mini Cooper SE, I got new I-PACE EV400. I've only had that a couple days now. Haven't really done a lot with it yet because I have this other project I'm working on that's really consumed all my time. But I started doing charging recordings of it last night. I took it to an Electrify America charging station to do the 10 to 80% recording. And then I'll do the 0 to 100% after I do the range test this weekend. And crazy thing was, I'm at the Electrify America station to do the charging for the I-PACE. And all of a sudden, a Genesis GV80 rolls up next to me. And like, you know, there's a couple of them in the U.S. My contacts have told me there's four of them in the U.S. So pretty cool that the guy just rolls up and parks, plugs in, and walks away. So as soon as he was like 50 feet away, I grabbed my tripod and put it in front, and I record the whole charging session. It was pretty cool. I took a bunch of pictures, and I have he plugged in at 33%. But I had to wait till he was at least 50 feet away before I started doing this. And it was already at 35% when I turned on my camera. But I got a 35 to 80% charging session recording and took a bunch of pictures and everything. It was pretty funny. You know, it was cold in New Jersey. It was like 34 degrees or so. And I guess the car was probably cold soaking because when he plugged in, it was only pulling 60 kilowatt. And Kyle can tell you that the Hyundai vehicles, the Genesis vehicles, the EGMP vehicles, when they're cold, they usually start off at around 60 kilowatt. And that's what this thing was pulling. And then it slowly crept up to 80. And then when I was at like, when it was at like, after like 15 or 20 minutes of charging, when it got to maybe 60%, 65%, maybe 70%, it jumped up over 100 kilowatt. And it was pulling 125 kilowatt at 77% state of charge. And you know, so it once the battery warmed up, it was pulling a lot more. But you know, these vehicles definitely all electric vehicles, you know, when they're cold, they don't pull as much, but you know, they're definitely my experience so far, because all I've tested was the Ioniq 5, and now seeing this in January and February of New Jersey when it's cold. You know, that seems like they won't pull more than 60 kilowatt when the battery is pretty cold, and then they'll gradually increase as it warms up a little bit. So, but I'll have the full video up pretty soon just for people to check out. I'm sure Genesis isn't going to be thrilled about that.
Did you have to keep tapping his screen? John Check asks.
Oh yeah,
like, on the Electrify America screen.
Yeah, every minute, every 60 seconds, the screen times out, and I had to do it like right after I did the I-PACE. So I was standing outside for 45 minutes. The I-PACE, I think 44 minutes to go from 10 to 80. And talking about the I-PACE, even though it's still no charging monster, it charges so much better when this vehicle first came out. I did recordings when the iPace first came out, and it was so slow. I mean, I think the most I ever got was like 88 kilowatt or something. I know this was a, you know, a year and a half ago or whatever.
Right.
But they've done a few upgrades on the charging curve and the maximum power. And I was pulling, I think I peaked at like 125, and it held, you know, over 120 kilowatt till about, now I'm probably forgetting because I was right after this, I was doing the Genesis. I think it was till like 70% or something. No, about 50%. But I'll have that whole recording up pretty soon. But it was holding 125 to somewhere around 50%, and then it started trickling down. But the interesting thing about the iPace was, at about 45%. Now I'm remembering it started ramping down, and I was like, wow, I wish it would hold it longer. But 5 minutes later, after things cooled down, it jumped back up to 125. So it did some thermal throttling for a little bit for after it was charging for about 20 minutes. Even though it was pretty cold out, you know, it had to drop the charging rate down for about 5 minutes or so. Then it went up to 120 kilowatt again for a while.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
I remember testing that car when it first came out 4 years ago, 3 years ago. It was a while ago. Yeah. This was one of the first electric SUVs other than Model X. Yeah. And really the car has been a total flop in my opinion in our market. And it was an amazing car that honestly came out a few years too early. That same car came out today, I think it would have been a huge hit. More people are ready for electric cars today. And I think Jag really mistimed their approach. You know, it was great that they were early, but it was an expensive car. There was no CCS infrastructure. This was just as Electrify America was starting to go in. Yeah. And honestly, wasn't even in my area when this car launched. So you're relying on these old level twos and 50 kilowatts. I had a friend who sold them. Anyway, I remember testing this car when it first came out, 70-ish kilowatts was all it do, 78 or something like this. Then they issued a software update early on that let it do 110. Mm-hmm. And now it sounds like there's been another update to go to 125, which is awesome. And it's still way too slow for the size of pack in that car. But that is one of the best EVs that no one ever talks about anymore. And it drives so well and it handles so well. I've done a track thing with it before. I was, you know, hucking it around our track, and it was awesome. Full on power oversteer. It was great.
Yeah, I think the problem with the Jaguar I-Pace is there was no story behind it that Jaguar wanted to give. It was a one-off car. It wasn't even built by Jaguar. It was built by Magna in Austria. And they really didn't want to support that car with a story, with a, you know, a narrative, a thing that we could get behind. You know, with VW, they've got all their ID cars, whether you like it or, you know, whether it should be called the Electric Golf or the Electric Polo, whether you use the old names or give them new names, but they've gone with the new name thing. But there's a story. There's more cars coming. This is the next one, the next one. Here's the van version. Tesla, of course, have got that great story about the whole, you know, the way the companies come around. And Jaguar didn't want to give this car a story. They want to say, this is the first of five EVs coming. We're going to launch an EV one a year, and this is the first one. Or really talk about, you know, this is our new platform. It was, hey, we made a one-off EV, and it's an amazing, amazing vehicle. But that's all they had to say about it. It's like, well, are you making any more? And they're like, well, we, you know, there's going to be an electric XJ one day, which has now been cancelled, of course. And that was the real problem, is that it was a company, and I can't remember whether the new CEO was it when he went in place. It was more recent, wasn't it, to Jaguar Land Rover? And there was just no momentum, no reason to get excited behind that car. You were right, though. It was too early. It was ahead of its time. It's an incredible vehicle.
Except Jan from Norway just commented, and he said it was the right time in Norway. And I would agree. I saw ton of iPaces in Norway, even to this day. That was the right time, the right car, the right infrastructure, because it couldn't charge that fast, but the infrastructure couldn't deliver that much power at the time. It was perfect. And of course, it was a premium product, but in Norway, you get huge incentives to buy electric vehicles, where premium cars are now matching, you know, normal prices for a combustion vehicle. It's just in the US, it had no marketing back. They had no explanation on how to use it. The dealers had no idea what to do. And they honestly spec'd really bad ones. This car is a very spec-dependent vehicle, and it needs the big wheels, and it needs the good stuff, and it is a premium product. But all Jag imported were like the little ugly wheels, and I'm like, what? Well, no one wants this. And it was true. Yeah. They just sat on lots.
Hey, but talking about...
Go ahead, Martin.
No, carry on. I was going to take you into a different direction.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it does, as Kyle said, it drives wonderfully. It is a fantastic driving EV. You know, if you want to drive it spiritedly, it can do it. If you just want it to be a luxury vehicle, it coasts along. It eats up irregularities in the road. Nice. It gives you a fantastic driving experience. And one of the things that I do want to point out that I think hurt it when it first launched was the infotainment system was terribly buggy and would crash constantly. I actually know two people that live in California that were very early iPACE owners. They bought them and they actually transitioned from the BMW i3. And that's why I knew them. I was big in that community. I knew a lot of the people and some of them sought me for advice on EVs. And they had they got iPaces and both of them had a lemon law, the vehicles back to Jaguar. Wow. They had a lot of problems early on. And I think the word kind of spread through the EV community that this thing's not ready for prime time early on. And it really hurt them because if you don't have the at that point, at least the EV community were cheerleaders, you know, people were looking at EVs. They went to the forums, they went into Facebook groups. You know, that's where the information was. It wasn't, you know, out there. As Martin said, Jaguar didn't do a good job of telling the story. So where do people get the info? They went to forums and so forth. And there was a lot of people talking about how laggy this infotainment system was, how it was freezing up, how it wasn't charging. Because Jaguar had said it was going to charge at 100 kilowatts pre-launch. And right. Then they get the vehicles out there. I actually went and drove one of them out in California when one of my friends that got one that ended up having it bought back. Wow. He was one of the first people to get it. So I drove it about 150 miles, like the first week these things hit the showroom floors and DC fast charge it. And I was like Kyle said, like 75 kilowatt, like really? And I actually mistakenly blamed the charging station because Jaguar had said this thing will pull 100 kilowatt. And the charging station, actually the company like saw like one of my tweets and messaged me. And they're like, Tom, we pulled the data. Like, you know, that car was not asking for more than that, just so you know. And it wasn't Electrify America. This was a different network. You know, they're out there watching. And I think that hurt the Jaguar because it should have done better. It's a good car. Yes, it was expensive, but it's a good car.
So how is it now with the entertainment screen? Is it laggy at all?
Much snappier. I have the new, like a new updated infotainment software. Much better. Is it still the best? No, but it's so much quicker than it was before. It really did make a difference.
Is it acceptable?
Yeah, it's totally acceptable. At this point right now, it's not state of the art, but you know, you don't tap the screen and then wait 2 seconds for it to jump to the next screen. It's pretty responsive.
Sweet. That's good.
I'll do the range test this weekend.
While we're talking about charging and Tom seeing that Genesis and making the video for that, I can highly recommend if anybody wants to watch his channel lately, there's been some brilliant charging videos, particularly, I would say, with the Lucid. And it's not just filming the charging and at the end of it saying, well, here's the results. But Tom, you've really dug into what the data means and the best conclusions you can come to. You know, you do a whole second half of that video where you're like, right, let's break this down into chunks. And that is that's an amazing video for anyone interested in this to go watch.
I appreciate that. And you know, there's people out there doing charging and analysis, like Bjorn for instance. He does a good job over there. And I really try to do something that's a little bit different than what a lot of people do. Some of my analysis, I really aim it towards common people that are getting EVs that maybe don't understand C rates and things like that. I'm trying to put it out there. So even if you don't know a lot about EVs, the way I explain the charging and the charging curve, you'll understand. I don't get too technical. It's kind of for EV newbies. And I think that's because most people coming to EVs now are new. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I appreciate you saying that I'm doing a good job at it.
I got to say, I should have taken a screenshot. I was working the other day just doing some stuff around my computer. So I put on one of Bjorn's live streams because he's got a secondary channel and he'll just live stream a 4-hour drive and just chat to people. They use a comment thing and people type messages and he looks across occasionally and he reads them and he talks to them. It is what it is. Thousands of people watch it. But Bjorn has said many times in the past, he doesn't consume other EV content. He says he looks at Facebook, but he doesn't watch other channels. And I suppose that's good and bad. It, you know, he doesn't try and be influenced by others, but he self-admittedly, he doesn't have time to watch other people's channels. He doesn't, you know, immerse himself in that world. And somebody on the live chat said, do you know that someone in America has just tested the Lucid Air and it went 500 miles? Didn't name you, didn't name Inside EVs. And I thought, this is interesting. We'll see where this goes. And so a lot of his viewers were responding to that, and Bjorn saw the message. He was like, oh, really? No, that can't be true. 500? 500? That's too much. Who did this test? Who is this guy? Did he take account of weather? Who did this? Did they do a loop? Was there elevation? What was the temperature? Look, there's lots of variables when you do a range test, guys. You need to be careful what you're watching out there. And somebody replied, it was Tom Malogny. And then another person replied and went, who is this Tom guy? Is he a noob? and Bjorn uses that noob as in a newbie, noob.
Exactly.
I didn't dive into the conversation, but I really wanted to go, yeah, like Tom just got into EVs like a couple of weeks ago, but he's done a really good test.
It's funny. Like, and since you're talking about noob, I have to tell you this one comment. I was doing the charge recording a few weeks ago on the Ioniq 5. And I'm standing there, you know, pressing the button, and I have a camera set up, and somebody else backs in an ID4, and he gets out and he knows what he's doing, and he plugs it in, he swipes, you know, because I always watch for people, because I help at least 50% of the people at charging stations, you know, initiate a charge or learn how to use their app and so forth. And so he sees me looking at the screen, and he plugs in, and he's like, you know, it doesn't charge faster if you watch it. And and I was like, really? I was like, well, that's what they told me. You know, you got to stay here and really monitor it, or, you know, there could be a problem. He's like, nah, you don't need to do that. Like, you know, just walk away. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to hang out here and watch it for a bit, you know, just in case there's some kind of issue. And he's like, oh, sue yourself. But, you know, you don't got to watch it. You should just go walk inside and have a cup of coffee. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm new at this stuff. You know, maybe I'll feel more comfortable in a couple of weeks. You know, and he's like,
oh, it was nice.
You know, and he walked away.
He sounds like a good guy. He was he was looking out for you.
He was, you know, it was nice. Fun. I just wish I had that recorded. Yeah. I wish I had like a separate camera set up, because it would have been a funny, you know, tweet or whatever.
So speaking of Tom as a noob, he shared a picture. I don't know if you can find that in our chat real quick, Martin.
What's that?
On the team's chat, there's a picture of Tom with a 2022 Mini Cooper SE.
Yeah.
With the hood popped open in front of his house. And it's sitting beside another picture of Tom standing beside a 2009 Mini E.
I did with the hood open, that one.
Standing in front of his house. So I got to say, Tom, your house has undergone as many changes as
the
probably more changes than the Mini Cooper has.
Exactly. Yeah.
13 years?
Yeah, I used that. It was about 12 years. I used that one picture of me in my driveway with the hood up was taken by, I think, the Wall Street Journal at the time. And it was in either Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. And it was kind of a picture that really circulated around the internet a lot. That picture has been out there, the one in 2009. So I thought I'd duplicate it now. And I had the Cooper SE. So I tried to put the car in the same place. I really didn't get it in the same place. I should have drove down my driveway a little bit further, but you get the effect.
Yeah, you can see it.
Yeah.
I aged
a lot. I didn't fare as, I didn't fare as well. My house looks better and I definitely look worse.
How you doing? You're doing good, man. And the car itself too, you don't have a back seat full of batteries anymore.
Yeah, the 2009 Mini E, it was really like a Frankenstein car that they just put together with all these off-the-shelf parts. The entire back seat was removed, and it was a giant battery block. So, right. You know, I mean, the one thing, the range is exactly the same. They're both range rated exactly the same. So they didn't really get anywhere with range, but with everything else they did. I mean, there's no thermal management. There was a fan built inside that big battery box that you could hear buzzing just to kind of blow over the batteries and cool them off. So it was nothing to warm them up. I mean, it was a very rudimentary vehicle, but it was a blast to drive. It had the craziest amount of torque steer. It was nuts. It had over 200 horsepower, and just how they implemented it, they didn't control torque steer at all. It was, you had to grab that wheel with as hard as you could when you stepped on it, because it just wanted to go in any direction. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. All right. So Let's see what else. So I was driving a car this week. I got to drive the Kia EV6. I went down to my dealer. It's in Tallahassee now. So I went down to my dealer and I spoke. I have actually know a gentleman who works there in sales, but he was super busy. That was last Saturday, and the place was busy, man. I couldn't believe how many people were in the Kia dealership buying cars and checking stuff out. But so we went and got to drive the EV6 and see it in person for the first time, actually. And you know, I was kind of down on the EV6, you know, compared to the Hyundai Ioniq 5 forever. But in person, it looks, especially the back, you know, that's where I had the biggest issue. But in person, I thought it looked great. It looks fine. It looks good. And it drove well. It wasn't super. I expected it to be a little quicker than it was. But I guess I'll have to wait for the GT to come out. We were driving a GT line. And I think they had a first edition as well, a launch edition car. So yeah, even the all-wheel drive, it was pretty, you know, it was good. It was great. You don't really need any more than what they offer you there. Oh, you found a picture. Awesome. So that's it in front of the local Kia dealer. It's a Werner Kia. And actually, I believe one of the owners of that dealership bought an EV6 himself. So I thought that was pretty cool when you can, you know, actually buy the what you're selling. The new stuff, the electric stuff. So it drove pretty well. We tried to use the parking assist on it, and we had some issues. I don't know, Kyle Tom, did either of you have any issues trying to use the automated parking? Like, I thought it was going to back into poles and other cars. We tried it like a bunch of times, and you know the warning would come up on the screen. It was like not stopping, so I'd hit the brake. I didn't want to smash up a brand new car.
So I don't know if Kyle has an experience, but I didn't use it at all when I did the EV6 press drive. I was just, you know, we have to compress so much into a couple of hours. You know, I have to get my driving impressions, how the vehicle feels on the road. Then I've got to pull up camera equipment to get recordings. And that's one thing I just didn't have time to test out was how the, you know, that self-parking. Or I also wanted to do the summon feature because it has like a summon feature, right. And I just didn't have the time to get it to either of those.
The summon thing, we tried that in a lot. It just goes, you know, straight forward and back, come out of the parking space for you, so you mm-hmm. don't have to step in the water or a tight garage.
Useful in some people have really tight garages and you know, packed with more stuff than you really need, right. But if they can clear just enough room and use that to pull it in and pull it out, I think some people will use it for that.
So you just use the fob and you hold the button down and it takes like, I think it's like 5 seconds. It seemed like it took a while. You're holding there and nothing's happening. And then all of a sudden, it starts moving. That was pretty cool.
Well, it's got to make sure you really want to do that. And it's not just in your pocket, you know, right. For a minute and the button gets pressed and right. It starts moving.
Oh man. I'm always hitting my alarm system. I lean against something with my key fob in my pocket and my car goes crazy. So I also went to visit the Cadillac Halo concept portfolio like a week ago, and I won't spend a lot of time on that because there are concepts and not actual driving automobiles. But basically I went there to see the Innerspace concept in person, and which debuted virtually at CES this year, and it was staged in the GM Design Dome, which is on the grounds of the GM Technical Center there in Warren, Michigan. And so on each side of it in this big room, they had the personal space and the social space concepts, which had debuted a year beforehand and also virtually because of the pandemic. So I think it might have been one of the first times people got to climb all over those. And one of those is like a one seat, like a drone, your own personal drone with like no steering wheel or anything. It looks kind of neat. And the other one's like it's the Cadillac version of the cruise van. It looks like a bread box, basically, but super fancy on the Cadillac one. It was actually kind of nice. We hung out inside there for a little bit. Has a pop-up bar and like a pop-up screen and a pop-up like fake fireplace thing with like water vapor. It was very nice. But you can read all about the Cadillac Innerspace on the Inside EV's website. But the key thing here is that it isn't a car that's coming to market. They believe a lot of the technology involved will be commercialized by 2030 and find its way into Cadillacs of the future. I guess the big takeaway is really that they want to take Cadillac upmarket significantly, and they're hoping to lean heavily into autonomous driving with a very tailored experience for owners and subscribers. So there's the whole subscriber plan as well. Also expect to see screens that span the entire width of the dash. So, but if you want a big electric Cadillac with a lot of presence and a steep price tag, then just hang out for a couple of years, and the Celestiq is coming. And I got to see that a couple of years ago at the GM EV Day, and the renders that you can see on our site don't do it justice. It's going to be like a pretty awesome car. It's like big and majestic, like you want a Cadillac to be. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Anyone have any inner world questions, concept questions? No? Okay. Go read the article.
Breaking.
It's got, yeah, possibly. It's like a big screen. It was kind of neat, you know, being in there. It has like a screen come across the whole front of it, basically curved, and it wraps around into the bottom of the doors even. It's pretty immersive. And so you can set it for anything, but you could also, we did a little bit simulating like driving down the road. So it uses a forward camera to display on the screen what's happening. And it's you know, it's like imagine sitting back in your living room, kind of lounged back, and then the world is just coming at you and going by you. It'd be kind of cool. Anyway, all right. So no huge news stories this week. This wasn't on our list, but I did write something down about it. So Arcimoto had a big event this week called Ramp It Up. They make the three-wheeled Arcimoto FUV thing we've had here on the channel a few times. One of Kyle's favorite three-wheelers.
Well, so I think they need a lot of work in their safety department, in my opinion.
Right.
But they're working on it.
Yeah. So they had a big event this week called Ramp It Up, and you can check out their video on their YouTube channel. They opened up like a huge 250 square foot new factory and announced a partnership with an outfit called Faction. It's going to use a version of the three-wheeler as a driverless delivery vehicle. It's not fully autonomous. It combines autonomy with remote human teleoperation, which is like, okay, that's an interesting concept. Maybe it's more achievable than in full autonomy. I don't know, in a better timeline. That allows the FUV platform to carry like 500 pounds because there's no like passenger controls going on there. And they also revealed something called the Mean Lee machine, which is like, did you see this, Kyle? This is right up your new Scoots alley.
Nope, I haven't heard of it.
It's got a pedal. It's like a three-wheeled, like a light electric vehicle, like a
bicycle. I didn't know what it was called. I knew about this. It's pretty cool.
Okay. So it has like a pedal generator, but it also has, you know, in-wheel hub motors, I guess, for the on the bicycle kind of style wheels. And they say like 200 mile range, and it tilts, so it looks kind of like fun to drive. I don't know. Anyway, I thought I'd just bring that up. All right, so let's get into one of our regular stories, and I guess we're over time a little bit. So the 2023 VW ID4 EPA range numbers are out, and they're a little higher than last year's model. So apparently the range comes from an improved efficiency, and the ID4 Pro is the biggest beneficiary with 20 miles of extra range. So yeah, another improvement for 22 regards the DC fast charging speed. Apparently that increases from 125 to 135. I don't know. Will that be a big change, I think, Tom?
Well, more range, faster charging, plug and charge. Yeah, I think VW is doing a good job improving what already started out as a great EV.
Do you think, Kyle, do you think your dad's going to want to trade his Ioniq 5 back in for the new improved ID4?
It's actually possible. I mean, he loves his ID4. So yeah, I could see that happening easily. I think one of the big benefits of ID4 over Ioniq 5 is the seating position is so much better, in my opinion. I love driving the ID4. After getting out of the ID4 for a few hours and into the Ioniq 5 for a few hours, I'd much rather be in the ID4 for that amount of time. You sit so much lower, much better seating position. The Ioniq 5 is better at every measurable category. But I've also spoken with some Volkswagen engineers about this 135 kilowatt trim. I've driven a car with this software that allows this, by the way, and the whole charging curve is totally different as well. I don't know how much I can say about it, but it's pretty sweet. And so while it's not going to be, again, when we looked at the Bjorn video of him driving the ID Buzz, they were claiming 170 kilowatts on the same battery capacity. That's a different chemistry battery than what we're going to be getting in the ID4. And so 135 is what we'll get out of this thing. But interestingly, we also get 135. When I was in Europe, I had that ID3 with the 58 kilowatt hour pack. That did 135. So that's the car I'm talking about. So why is it the bigger battery can't do more? I don't have an answer for you, but they're just probably being uber conservative.
Marty Walsh was asking when it's coming out of Chattanooga, and I believe that's the next this summer, maybe around August, I'm guessing. And Scott Berger asks or says, I get the feeling there's a lot more capacity lurking in the ID4. Vehicle feels very understressed. I believe he's an owner as well, Scott.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
You can do anything you want to an MEB car and it just doesn't care.
Right. I like the MEB platform strategy.
Me too.
Yeah.
But it's definitely feeling old now with EGMP out, you know, designed much more for the future. MEB is feeling like a little bit old school, in my opinion.
Okay. So maybe they need to look into how they can upgrade their future.
The big question is for us, it's really exciting to see 240, 260, 300 kilowatt charging. Do normal people care? The answer is I have no clue. I've never met an ID4 owner that says they wish it charged faster. It's never a comment I've heard from them. Unless it was cold gating, but once it's up and running, you know, a lot of my family drives ID4 because when that car came out, I thought it was so special and so great. Everyone bought one and you know, everyone's pleased with theirs. So I think it's great for what people actually need. And the price is awesome.
So the point that Matthew Bonnet made when he was on with us on Monday is that he sees the charging moving completely to almost to a gas station kind of model, where if you own a car in the city and you don't plug it in, you don't have a place to plug it in, you're just going to go, you know, once a week or whatever to a charging space and plug it in. So I think in that situation, charging times becomes a bit more of a selling point, you know? So,
well, cold battery charging times, but also especially. That kind of sucks, to be honest. That the best part of an EV is charging it up overnight. So many people don't have access to that. If I didn't have home or workplace charging, you wouldn't see me driving an electric car every day, to be honest.
Right. It is a fair point. And I guess we can talk about this more on the future. We have other infrastructure series episodes coming up. I can't remember what this week is, but maybe Tom can jog my memory.
Yeah, on Monday, I sent you the email. Who do we have to confirm? Is it EVGO?
I think so.
EVGO is coming up this week on Monday. Yeah, we've got...
So they're more of a city-based kind
of... the person's name.
Jonathan Levy.
I forgot that. Yeah, he's coming. CEO. So it's going to be a good show.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when we spoke to the CEO of Allego, of course, he said that in his opinion, the future is DC fast charging, very rapid charging. It was in response to a question I asked him about how we solve the 30 to 40% of people who don't have the off-road parking, depending on where you are in the world. And but his company are also less focused now on slower AC charging, and they're going all in on. So in a way, you know, they're approaching a listing, becoming public. He has to be careful what he says. That's the future. So of course he's going to say that, if I'm being cynical, but maybe he genuinely does believe it as well. But you know, and just in terms of the challenges that you have to overcome with putting a lot of energy into a battery very, very quickly, and we can see that that's been achieved by very few, you know, engineering solutions so far. Tesla, EGMP platform, the Taycan e-tron GT platform, but it's by far an easy problem to solve. So no, nice, slow drip overnight for those that can. That should absolutely be as much as a part of owning an EV life as DC fast charging when you're road tripping. Or if you live in an apartment and you genuinely can't charge overnight, then that is only one of the solutions. For instance, in China, they haven't gone down that route. They've gone down battery swapping, and it's massively popular. So,
right,
which is even quicker, because it's 5 to 7 minutes, depending on whether it's NIO or whoever. And then you've got a whole new fresh battery that's probably been slow charged, ironically, overnight the night before to keep it nice and healthy. So it's only one solution.
So with Allego, they had already a huge network of 11 kilowatts, I believe, area AC charging throughout, scattered throughout neighborhoods and like clumps of twos and threes. And I have the feeling, and they're moving to the fast charging, you know, more centralized sort of structure or whatever. So I'm thinking maybe they just can't make any money doing it the old way. And like fast charging with one big location and get a lot of throughput. Maybe that's the way they need to do it to make money. So I don't know. I still feel there's a place for neighborhood charging, like municipalities working with a company to put in like, you know, street parking with plugs. So slow overnight stuff. It's not very sexy. It's not very profitable probably, but I think we need to have like equity and, you know, people in urban neighborhoods need to be able to charge. They don't, you know, you don't want to have like food deserts. You don't want to have like charging deserts in parts of towns, you know.
But that only works because you can make money selling food. It's really hard to make money selling electricity.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but you have even with the ability to make money selling food, there's like places like in bigger cities where you have to, you know, you have to go for like an hour to get to a grocery store.
Yep.
It's like
welcome
bizarre.
To what it's going to be like for EV charging. Same thing. If you and I wouldn't put a charger in a place that we got to spend money so someone else can charge. I wouldn't do that. I would say, you know, we'll put a charger here where we can make money and it's cool and people can. And if they want to drive an EV, that's up to them. I think the cars are great. And my biggest thing, you know, for the next 3 years, the cars are amazing. The right. charging infrastructure sucks so bad across everywhere. Not even just from working or not working. That's one topic, but also how people are going to charge. We haven't even figured out, like, there's not one, I think, great solution to inner urban area charging that works across multiple different, you know, cities. And that's like the big red flag. Number one, we can't figure out charging. Why is everyone buying EVs right now? I don't know. So we'll see.
If we have EVgo on Monday, we can talk about their, because their strategy is in cities where Electrify America is like helping you bridge the gap between cities.
Yeah, they put like two DC fast chargers there, which is like, you know, look, they got to promote their company. They want to share them in the best possible light and they have their ideas. But what I don't think we've had up to this point yet is a full panel of solutions, policymakers, people that are investing in EV charging, that are actually financially backing these installations, and users of both combustion and electric vehicles, that we have no good solution for a lot of charge situations at the moment.
Right.
When you leave home, you don't know you'll be able to charge somewhere as easy. You know that a petrol station is on every corner. Mm-hmm. And if you find one that's out of fuel, it's such a rarity. And I can't think of the last time I did, outside of exceptional circumstances when there was a fuel crisis last year here. And with an electric car, I can't hand on heart say that when you head towards a charger and there's two or four of them or whatever on a small station, that they're not all going to be busy and that you're going to have to wait. Now, it doesn't happen very often, or they're broken. It doesn't happen very often, but you can't promise someone who's moving to EV, hey, this is going to be as easy as...
Yeah, there's no way you could ever say owning an EV is easy as a gas car at all.
I can't guarantee it. Not at the minute. Not right. at the moment. And, you know, you look at these pictures in China where they put an AC point on every car parking space. There's a car park with 450 spaces, and each one has got a 3.6 kilowatt. Yeah, because someone's come to work. They're plugged it in all day. Like, perfect. That's the solution.
Charge network is a great solution.
Wherever I go, there's going to be a socket somewhere, whether it's 3 or 7 or 22 or 150. Wherever I go, I'll plug it in.
I think right now there's such a dearth of charging that, you know, wherever we can do it, let's put them in, like slow charging, fast charging, I think. I don't know.
Who's going to spend the money? You're going to spend the money?
Well, I mean, we got five, like, well, we have $5 billion.
Spending a lot of money really soon.
$7 billion altogether.
I'm not saying it's going to be the smartest and done the best, but there's a ton of money getting poured into this. And look, so I have a little bit of a different take on this. Does charging suck right now in a lot of places? Absolutely. I agree with that 100%, but you have to understand, EVs have just started in this last decade and really in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, it wasn't going to be like we were going to snap our fingers and we're going to have perfect solutions. It's going to take years. But I believe that we're going to solve this. You know, there's going to be demand. There's going to be people are going to figure out ways to make money. There's going to be tons of investment. I mean, I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I've done some consulting for some groups that have a lot of money and are just sitting and waiting for us to hit a critical point in EV adoption to just pour billions of dollars of private money into it, let alone what we're getting publicly. Is it going to be a hodgepodge of disconnected networks and everything for a while? Absolutely. I'm a little bit more bullish on the future outlook, and not too far. I'm talking 5-6 years from now. I think we're going to have a lot. We're going to be in a lot better place than we are right now. And I've seen from day one when I got my first electric car, you saw me in that picture before, there wasn't a single public charging station in the state of New Jersey, not a level two charging station, not a DC, nothing. So I literally had a 100 mile or a 50 mile leash. That was it. And, you know, where we've come since then to me is amazing. Like, my wife can't believe we can drive an electric car to her parents' house in Vermont. Like, that wasn't, you know, I did it back then for fun, like, and stopped at campgrounds. And it took me like 18 hours to go 200 miles, you know, but like, you know, where we are right now inspires me that I know we are going to get there, because the advances we've made in the last 6 or 7 years is crazy. And I know most people haven't been driving EVs for 6 or 7 years, but I have, and I've seen how we've progressed. And to me, to be able to go to a DC fast charger and to charge for 80% in 15, 20 minutes, it's just so incredible considering what I had to deal with back 7-8 years ago. And I know it kind of sucks right now, but I don't want people to be discouraged about that. There's smart people working on this. We're going to figure it out. There's tons of money being invested in this. We're going to, in 7 or 8 years, we are going to be looking at something. Are we still going to have challenges there? Yeah, because I think adoption is going to outpace, you know, infrastructure. So there's going to be some pain points, but we're going to figure this out. People that live in multifamily dwellings are going to be able to charge. They're going to be able to own EVs. We're going to get old. There's a lot of smart people working on this right now. And this is, you know, this isn't going to hold back adoption.
Yeah, I totally agree. In the future, I think it totally will be figured out. I agree with your time frame of 5 to 8 years. It will have a really good outlook. But I think today, you know, when you're coming from owning an electric car back when no one was really supposed to own an electric car because there was no infrastructure, to someone like my mom who owns a gas car transitioning to an electric car, it's just measurably worse if you don't have home charging.
Can't argue with that. You're 100% right. And will people buy electric cars today, get frustrated with charging, sell them and say, I'm never buying an electric car again? Yes, it's going to happen. I mean, I've talked to these people at the DC fast chargers where they were so frustrated until I went over, talked them off the cliff, showed them how to use the app, showed them how to plug in.
You know, it's off the cliff. I like that.
Seriously, like I've seen people so frustrated, like on the phone, like almost crying, calling their husband about how they can't figure out how to do this. And I'm just like, take a breath. You know, you actually happen to pull up to the right charging station. You got the right guy. I'll be able to get, I promise you, I'm going to get your car charged one way or the other. But, you know, on the other side, so last night when I was doing the Jaguar charging, because the guy pulls up, backs in with an ID4, plugs in and just start yapping with him. And it's his wife's car. Once a week, he takes it to get charged. They got the car because of the 3-year unlimited charging. He did the math. He did the numbers. He's like, you know, I did all the numbers. He goes, this is saving us $6,000 in 3 years. He said and he goes, I will drive a half an hour to this station and sit here for an hour, because he charges it to 100%, you know, so my wife has enough power to drive all week. He goes, for me,
$2,000 a year, he's willing to take like 2 hours out of his day.
I love it.
Well,
this
guy's got all the time in the world.
One day a week, I come and I fully charge, and he goes, it's totally worth it for us. He goes, she loves the vehicle, and you know, I'm going to slowly get her into doing this, but for now, I promised her I would take care of the charging. And they live in an apartment, and he goes, it's been working out great. They've had it for like 4 months, and he goes, just once a week, I need to come and top and wow, bring it to 100%. He goes, I'm totally fine with that. So people find ways. Everybody has different tolerances. Everybody will accept different levels. And is it going to be a sub, you know, a delightful experience to gas refueling for a while? Absolutely. But, you know, I think I'm really optimistic that, you know, we're going to get there, and it's going to be a little painful for some people. And some people are going to get pissed and they're going to sell their car and say, this thing sucks. And I can't charge this way. I can't live my life wondering if I could plug in. I agree 100%, but it felt like we were going down the doom and gloom road. And I don't want people to have that opinion. Right. We're kind of like really like we want everything to be perfect because we know we've had great experiences. We've all lived with electric vehicles. We've had the great experiences, the bad experiences. But overall, I'm really bullish on infrastructure. And I think we're going to have so much money poured into it in the next 5, 6, 7 years. It's going to be amazing where we're going to be at by the end of this decade.
I'm excited to watch it all unfold. And yeah, doom, of course, I always try and bring up counterpoints because then we can argue about things, of course. And I can see Tom's stuff all the time as well. How, you know, charging today is so much better than it was 3 years ago. We were just talking about iPace, how there was no Electrify America. There was no DC chargers. It's getting better. I just think the measuring point is, when is it less or more frictionless than owning a combustion car without home charging? Then we've hit a point for critical mass, in my opinion. Because right now we're sort of relegated to those who are lucky, who have workplace charging or a garage with a plug at home like we do. But I would say a lot of people are not that lucky, and the EVs can save you a lot of money, but not if you have to fast charge them all the time at today's prices. So we can get into it.
People don't like to think about it. Like after that EV6 road trip with my friend, that was his first.
Well, a lot of people may not know about that. You did 1,000 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. You did mention it last week, but I fully expected him to sell it the next day we got back. He hated it. He was exhausted from that road trip, but it was because he had, you know, a lot of people don't process like, oh, when it's cold, it won't act like it will when it's warm. And charging speed advertised by the manufacturer is not what you're going to get for most of the curve. And so, and then all the planning that goes into charging. Of course, we used a better route planner. The car didn't have any in-route planning.
Which is crazy to me, how you could have the most technically advanced chassis without on-route reconditioning or really solid route planning.
But now that he's got it back home, he's like in love with it again. So it really is just dependent on what you're expecting. But it was not frictionless as far as the road trip experience. I was having fun. Maybe it's because I've driven with Kyle enough to where it's like, oh yeah, when we get down to 1%, we can still get there. But yeah, he had range anxiety hitting at 80% because the range guessometer was so off of what it should have
been. I haven't experienced range anxiety in 3 years. I don't even think about it anymore, right? But we're used to it. So I don't know.
EV6 looks good in that picture there, by the way. Just saying.
First time.
Looks good.
Tom, let me interject real quick. Somebody asked a while ago, and I forgot, I was going to pull the comment up. Somebody asked, Tom, did you get your build date for your F-150 Lightning? And yes, I have. Ooh. May 19th.
May 19th.
Yeah, March 18th.
Not long to wait. March
8th. Pick it up at the factory, Tom.
Okay.
I'd love to figure out a way to work that out with Ford. So let's
come off the line. Drive it off the line. That would be awesome.
That would be a good video. Awesome. Yeah, that would be a good video.
Yeah.
So Ford, if you're watching,
stay tuned.
I would love that.
So speaking of being optimistic about the future, another story I thought deserved at least a mention is from Faraday Future, who has finally built its first production intent FF91. So anyone familiar with the EV space knows Faraday Future has been struggling since it first announced itself, you know, some years back. Now it's being run by Carsten Breitfeld, who is an ex-Byton CEO, and previous to that, I believe, Tom, you know him from his days at BMW, and then the ill-fated Byton, yeah.
And by the way, Faraday Future had the worst initial product launch press conference of any startup in history. It was abysmal. This was years ago when they first did their launch, and anybody who was there, and it was a packed room of reporters. I mean, I was there with everybody in the industry at the time. I think I was hanging out with John Volker and Sebastian Blanco at that night. And we were all flabbergasted with how terrible the presentation was, but they seem to be, you know, on their feet now and going into production.
They're still around. So, I don't know. It's always looked a little awkward to me, this car, but you've seen it up close. And and you've even ridden in it back in early 2020. Yeah. So what do you think of it? And what kind of confidence do you have that they'll finally start production of this car in the third quarter of this year, which is, I believe, their target.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to really say I'm confident on production. I mean, it's right. been dragging on so long. But I will say that they have managed to get a good infusion of cash. They brought in some people that, know what they're doing. As far as driving I didn't drive it, but I drove in it. I think twice I did. Once was for a fairly long drive too. I mean, it's a total like Uber luxury vehicle. I mean, this is, I know a lot of people kind of compared it to a Lucid, but no, it's completely different than Lucid. The inside of that thing is like, Rolls Royce caliber, the seats and the comfort level and everything. It's an extreme luxury vehicle, so it's in a different category, and I forget exactly how much it was. Do you have the price? I think it's more expensive than the Air. It's a super expensive vehicle, but it drove pretty well. It was fast and everything, like as you would expect. But it's pre-production. It was kind of loud. It didn't have like some of the door panels were plastic, where they were going to be leather in the future. That's what a lot of times the pre-production builds just do mock-ups on the interior. But they had like the comfortable seats and everything that they had. And really, the interior is something to behold. It's really beautiful and luxurious. But this is a really low volume, vehicle. I mean, I think it's aimed at like executive limousine type, vehicles where, you have a driver and you sit in the back and the rear seats like fully recline. I think they were called zero gravity or something seats to make it feel like you're floating on air. I sat in them. I didn't feel like I was floating. It was really comfortable, but it's an interesting vehicle. I thought it really looks nice. And I'm sure some people would buy it, especially like, top notch executives that want to be chauffeured around. Because that really seems like what all the infotainment and everything was really aimed towards, like almost like a working luxury working environment.
So I'm not sure how much has changed since 2020, but originally they were planning on making like 30,000 of them last year. That didn't happen, obviously. But it has a 378 mile of range with a 130 kilowatt hour battery. So maybe 350 to 400 miles might be what people see. We have a story on this on Inside EVs right now from the 24th, so yesterday. So, and you can watch the video. Mr. Brightfield is giving the presentation, and he's kind of, watching him. He's kind of, I found myself nodding along. I could maybe I'm just naive or something, but maybe we'll have a good car this year.
Well, he's a great presenter, Karsten. And, that's why Byton brought him in. He was a co-CEO, but he was the CEO that did all the presentations, he was like the father of the BMW i8. I mean, it was his program, the i8. He was completely responsible for the i8. And I remember sitting down and talking to him about, well, why did you leave BMW after, he was in there for a long time. He was at like the highest level of management underneath board of directors for BMW. And if anybody knows, the German manufacturers really take care of their employees, especially, when they retire, and he probably could have retired in just a few years. He was at that high level of management. And I asked him, why didn't you just, take that golden parachute, work the last 5-6 years at BMW and just retire. You made it, you achieved this level, and now you went to work for the startup that who knows if they'll ever even make it. And they didn't make it. I asked him, and he said, well, after working on a car where I was given a complete, autonomy to do anything I want, clean platform, clean slate, build the supercar of the future. He said, after working on that for the last 4 or 5 years, BMW was going to, just continue with their electric vehicle plans. And we've talked about this before, but then there was a board of director meeting and they decided to pull back and wait a whole product cycle. And he was expecting to go into the next, or maybe the i5, maybe whatever. And they said, well, we're going to have you work on the next 7 series. And he said, I just couldn't go back. He said, I had to keep moving forward and create the future. And that's one of the reasons why he left and went to work for Byton. I'm sure a boatload of money also played a role in that. But it was interesting to hear him say that after working on the i8, He couldn't just go back and work on pure combustion vehicles anymore. He's only going to be involved with electric vehicles. And Henrik Wanders, who was also involved in BMW's I program, I think he did more on the i3 though. He was also a very high level manager. He went with him to Byton, and now he's the head of electrification at Audi. And that was when BMW announced or told management that they were going to be scaling back their EVs, the whole I team left. Well, I won't say the whole I team, but most of them. And they're all right. Still in electrification at different brands now. But Carson's now with Faraday.
It's a bit of a brain drain. Oh,
yeah, they had a big brain drain. This was like 2014-ish, 2015, right. When they kind of reorganized. It was a Rutherford stepped down. Kruger took over. There was a new CEO. There's a power play on how the money was going to be spent. And, you know, I have some background knowledge to this. And basically, the new CEO was kind of told by some other board members and some very powerful people at BMW that you are going to walk back electrification. And he did.
Jeez. Huh. Well, I don't know what to say to that.
Except, probably the best move they could have done, to be honest. They were burning cash like crazy on EV stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but they got the cash. I mean, they could have had the...
I don't think they did. They were so close to issue. They were at the worst point in their history when they were doing this stuff. They had financial issues. Investors were freaking out. Look, I get it. And I think right now is the perfect time for i4, for iX to launch. Yes. We have the infrastructure to support it. We have, you know, now's the time. And I'll be driving those cars again soon, doing some testing. I'm really looking forward to it. iX and i4, awesome cars. Yeah. Tom, you've driven them both.
They're awesome cars. I just think maybe they could have pulled back on the billions they were pouring in carbon fiber and all the stuff, lightweighting and everything. But yeah. I think the i4 that's coming out now should have come out maybe 2 to 3 years after the i3.
Totally
that
agree.
That should have come out in 2018 when Tesla launched the Model 3. Because the fact that this startup from California beat BMW at having the ultimate driving machine in that segment. Yep. And it is. The Model 3 is the ultimate driving machine that segment. And they literally stole BMW's, you know, moniker. And if BMW would have come out with an i4 back then, and they could have come out with that vehicle back then, it's bullshit if anybody tells you they can, or if any BMW manager, pardon my French, says, oh, well, we couldn't do it then. That's total BS. I have intimate knowledge the fact that they could have done this. I was involved with BMW's program back then. If that vehicle would have launched in 2018, I think the whole company would have a different feel right now.
Agreed. Right now, they've
lost their edge. BMW has lost their edge.
Yep. And the Model 3, like you mentioned, is not even a better driver's car. It's just a better 3 Series. And imagine explaining that to someone at BMW 10 years ago. I always
think about that. Every 100%. But people are going to love the i4. Kyle loved it. I loved it. Yep. People are going to love the i4. But damn, if that thing would have come out in 2018, that the BMW would have a different look right now, I believe.
I've already done an i4 review, by the way. It's on the channel.
Oh, nice. Right. All right. So we should get going soon. A couple of headlines I wanted to hit really quick just to mention them. 2023 Kia Niro EV specs were out in Sweden and with a European range of 287 miles. That's on the WLTP test procedure. 287. So that's a little bit more than the previous one. It looks better. The 2023 EV Niro looks pretty great. I like what they've done with that. See the BYD Yuan Plus. I don't know if Yuan. I don't know how you pronounce that. Yuan EV has arrived and has global ambitions. That's the story on Inside EVs worth checking out. We don't have BYD cars here in the US yet, but eventually it could happen. So it's a good look at see where they're headed at. And the Volkswagen e-Up, Martin, is back in production and available for sale.
Yeah, it got to a 16 or 18 month wait time on that, and they've worked through the back orders, and it's back on sale. It's because why not?
That's kind of crazy. You know, you phase the car out.
Yeah, look, the ID2 isn't here anytime soon, so sell the e-Up. I mean, if it's profitable, then why not?
Yeah, I guess if you're, yeah. I mean, it's so weird to see a car come back, like it was gone.
Well, yeah, but we've also, so we've got escalating CO2. The EU, the European Union, has some escalating CO2 emissions rules.
Okay.
So, you know, sell enough, and it's not quite as simple as this, but sell one EV and you get to sell two big stinky SUVs or very profitable big cars. It's shifting a bit, but it's roughly, the more EVs you sell, the more cars you can sell that you make big profits on. So look, absolutely, why not sell some cheap little city cars, get lots of, it's not quite ZEV credits, but it's our version of CO2 compliance. And yeah, everyone's got to make sure they're compliant or they face big fines to the EU rulemakers. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense to sell that car.
Right on. That's kind of nice. We don't get that here in the US. It's very like a small bare bones kind of.
Oh, it's a roller skate. I'll send one over in the post.
It's like kind of like my little Spark EV kind of in a way.
Yeah, you know? Great. Perfect.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Logney at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily Podcast. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. Jordan, you've been kind of quiet today, but what's your Twitter?
At @_Sheever.
Yeah, why'd you even join? You didn't say anything.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
You can give us the answer. So click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, because you want to be reminded when we're doing a little pop-up show on probably, I guess, Monday at 10 o'clock will be the next one. And so we'll see you all then. Ciao. Speak up, man.